Hello, everybody.
We'll call the Senate Tax Committee to order. Members, Senator Pappas has a staff meeting to prepare for the floor session today at 9:30, so we're going to move the agenda around a little bit. Senator Pappas, Senate File 935. Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Mr. Chairman,
Pensions Commerce.
Mr. Chairman, just a little background here. This is our attempt to, if you will, fix the police and fire state aid proposals for their pensions with PERA, MSRS, and the cities and counties. We have kind of a joint project proposal, and it's kind of a shared pain proposal where pensioners are being asked, the police and fire are going to pay more in contributions, and employers will pay more. Police and parapolice and fire will pay 1.4% more in contributions, and employers will pay 1.8% more.
Senator Pappas, a quorum is present. And Senator Pappas, there is a delete everything amendment.
Right. So I'm just trying to give a little background. And so
can I
today,
pass the delete everything out?
I'm sorry?
Can
yes,
I
please
pass
do.
The delete amendment?
Please do.
Thank you. Senator Pappas.
It's the A-9, right?
A-9 amendment.
The whole reason we're here is that the current police and fire state aids have dropped about $23 million in the last 8 years, a $12 million drop for the police and $11 million drop in fire aid. And as a result, we're concerned about the need for cities and counties in the state to pay more. Also, the 700-plus volunteer fire departments have seen a 34% reduction in state funding that supports their pension because of the drop in state fire aid. So the original proposal was a $5 annually surcharge on auto insurance policies that would raise about $15.5 million annually, and a $5 per year surcharge on homeowners policies that would raise an estimated $7.5 million annually. That was changed from the surcharge in commerce to a general fund request by Senator Reinert. And the A-9 amendment is that was not real properly drafted. It was drafted kind of at the last minute. No criticism of Senator Reinert there. So we've had to redraft it, and that is the A-9 proposal that is before you.
And Senator Reinert, have you had a chance to review the A-9 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I've had a chance to briefly review the A-9 amendment. It does stay with the intent that of the bill as it left Commerce Committee, but does it in a much more thoughtful and comprehensive way.
Senator Reinert moves the A-9 amendment. Any more discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Thank you, Senator Reinert. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I have a few people here who are available to testify on the proposal, starting with Mr. Brian Rice.
Mr. Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for granting us a hearing on this bill. I represent the Minneapolis Police Officers Federation, the Minnesota Professional Firefighters, and the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. And we'd also like to thank Senator Pappas for carrying this very important bill. I believe the committee also has a letter from the Legislative Commissions on Pensions and Retirement. Under the legislation that governs the Pension Commission, they have the responsibility to advise other committees of the legislature on bills that concern pensions. And I've worked on pensions for over 31 years now, Mr. Chairman. I think this is only the first or second time that I can recall that the Pension Commission has felt an issue is so important that they bring it to the attention of other committees. And what I'd like to say and why this is so important is this. The state has 30,000 police and firefighters in this state. There are 11,000 police officers, including city, county, sheriffs, state highway patrol, BCA agents, game wardens, Metropolitan Police, any licensed police officer is basically covered by this legislation, and this legislation affects all of them individually as well as all their pension funds. In addition, there are 2,000 full-time firefighters in the state located primarily in the larger population centers, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud, Crookston, our larger cities. And perhaps most importantly to this bill, there are 17,000 volunteer firefighters in the state. They provide a huge service to the community. And what I think this committee needs to know, and this is the first time I've testified on this issue of state aid. In 1997, there was a major issue that the tax committee had to deal with on how these aids work and what the appropriate taxation on issues like this are. And the reason for that is this. There are no pension commissions on the tax committee. There used to be several, but if I could just take a moment, police and firefighters are not covered by Social Security. They are outside of that system. The para system that you now have was established in the 1930s, I believe, but they now have elements of pension plans that go back to 1886 that have been merged and consolidated with them. And the state has had a long history, a very long history of funding police and fire pensions going back to the 19th century. And many of these plans predated Social Security. And as a result, when Social Security was passed, they gave states the options to opt out for police and fire. And Minnesota has always exercised that option. So whatever benefits these police and firefighters have are set by this legislature. And once the benefits are set, it's necessary to pay for these. So, and these pensions, they're called pensions, but they're much broader than that. They include the disability policy if they're injured on duty. They include the survivor feature for their spouses and for their dependent children. And in essence, it's their security net, much like Social Security is for every other American. So in my opinion, it's an awesome responsibility that the legislature has in dealing with these plans. To the, again, just quickly background, in 1871, the state imposed a gross earnings tax on fire insurance premiums that insurance companies paid. And ever since 1871, those aids have been directed at fire departments in order to provide initially their equipment and their salaries. And by the turn of the 20th century, it was went to pay their pension costs. And the argument for that was the better you had fire departments, the more likely you were to prevent property loss and damage. A better fire system meant you'd reduce casualty losses to insurance companies. In 1971, the legislature expanded this concept to auto insurance premiums, and they dedicated the revenues from that to the payment of police pensions that, in essence, was a local government aid program that helped cities meet their obligation to these pensions. And the nexus to it is this. Police officer, you cannot make a claim for insurance in this state unless there's been an accident investigation report filed with the local police department and with the state. And police officers are called to those scenes to assess potential liability and responsibility for driving to determine who's at fault. They make accident investigation reports so that there's a record of what happened. And it's a huge service. In essence, the public is providing the investigation for these insurance companies. And it's very important. As Senator Pappas said, there is a parallel bill going through the legislature dealing with the pension funding question for police and fire and para. And in that bill, there is a $450 million reduction in benefits for police and firefighters. And it's done in this way. COLAs are capped or delayed or and reduced. Vesting is increased. Early retirement penalties are quadrupled, and the employees are putting in an additional contribution of 1.2%, and employers are adding another 1.8%. And why this bill is before you is that in 2010, police and fire came to the table and reduced benefits by $550 million, And in that bill, the same thing happened. Cost of living increases were reduced, benefits were changed and reduced, and contributions were increased. So over the last 3 years, if Senator Pappas's pension bill passes, police and fire will have reduced their pension liabilities by over $1 billion, which represents a 10% cut in their benefits in a three-year period. In addition, police and fire will have their contributions increased by 1.4%. Employers will have their contributions increased 2.1%, and the cost on those are into the hundreds of millions of dollars prospectively. Police and firefighters came to the table to do this to ensure that the pensions that they've earned in the past, the promises that will be made will be kept, and that they and their spouses and dependents will have adequate security both while they're working in case they are injured or die on duty, or that they'll have adequate protection when they die. And as we looked at this issue, and now I'll refer very quickly to this green packet. It's I basically explained the background on the first page, but if I could walk quickly through what's happened to these accounts, I believe it's important. As Senator Pappas noted, state fire aid was almost $32 million in 2006. Last year it dropped to $22 million. And I have the backup sheets from revenue for you to look at. A 30% reduction in those fire aids. So that has hurt cities and counties. It's made them go from substantially increase their contributions. And most significantly, for the 17,000 volunteer firefighters in the state, since their pensions are directly tied to this aid amount, they have seen a 30% reduction in the dollars flowing into their pension funds, which has either caused them to reduce benefits or increase employer contributions. On the yellow sheet, quickly go through the same thing as happened with the police state aid. In 2004, police state aid was $72 million, and over 90% of the cost of local governments' pension contributions were met by that amount. Last year, the aid dropped by $12 million, and it's $60 million a year. Cities are now paying 60% of the cost of these pensions. And lastly, I'll conclude with the there's a spreadsheet that will basically line up with the bill on where these aid dollars would go. The surcharge is not in, so you could ignore the auto part of it, but what would happen with the distribution, and it lines up with the amounts that are on the bill on page 1, line 9, line 12, line 18, and then the division at lines 33 and 34. These dollars will not go for additional benefits. What they'll do is go to stabilize the pension fund, so we're not back at the table giving another $1 billion in pension reductions. Two-thirds of the fund will go on approximately $10.6 million will flow into PARA to provide a cushion of about 1% sufficiency for the plans. $1 million will go to the State Highway Patrol plan that covers troopers, game wardens, BCA agents. PARA employers will see $5.3 million to help meet about half of the pension cost increase in Senator Pappas's bill. The state will receive $516,000 for the troopers' plan to help those budgets. And the last point might be one of the most important. Volunteer firefighters will receive $5.5 million to substantially replace the aid that those groups have lost. And on this last point about volunteer firefighters, Minnesota ranks 45th in the nation in the cost to provide fire service. It works out to be $70 per person in the state. The reason that cost is so low is that we have 80%, 90% of our firefighters are volunteers. If Minnesota was just at the average 25th in the nation, it would cost the state an additional $335 million if we went from $70 a person to provide fire service to the national average of $140. The state would have to incur, and its local governments would have to incur, an additional cost of $335 million per year to provide that fire service at the level of the national average. And the reason it's so efficient is because you have these 17,000 volunteer firefighters who work every day, who are working for, and this is my closing comment on the last page, it shows the aid amount by districts. This is a document produced by the state auditor that shows by region of the state the amount that each volunteer firefighters earns for each year of service. And in greater Minnesota, it's slightly more than $1,000 for year of service. So if an individual works 20 years in a volunteer fire department and works those full 20 years, he'll get a grand, or she will get a grand total of $20,000 to $25,000 for that lifetime of service to the community for responding. And in almost all of these jurisdictions in greater Minnesota, the aid is, that's all that they get. They're not paid on call. They're simply volunteers. There is a feature in the bill that weights these dollar distributions to greater Minnesota by providing a minimum distribution for firefighters before any of the other dollars are done. It represents about 10% of that aid goes to those departments because it's so critical to have these individuals who respond to these situations. So in conclusion, what this bill does is stabilize these funds. It's done in conjunction with $1 billion cut in benefits over the last 3 years and very significant contribution increases by the employers and the employees. And I know you've probably heard or seen these radio ads that have been run by the opponents of the surcharge. I just want to comment that I haven't heard these insurance companies complain in 1982 when nearly 80% of the Minneapolis Fire Department went to a fire at Norwest Bank Building in downtown Minneapolis, and 500 firefighters saved the downtown core of Minneapolis from a complete conflagration and saved hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars of property. I didn't hear these individuals complain when the 35W bridge collapsed and police officers and firefighters were rescuing those. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. Questions? Members? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the reforms. Senator Pappas, Mr. Chair, I like the reforms that you're doing, obviously. Having said on the pension commission the last 2 years, and I miss you, Senator Pappas, on the commission. But anyway, having
miss
sat
you
there.
Too, Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain.
But having sat there, I understand, I realize also that there's long-term, deep-seated problems and with the pension plans. And this, well, you got some reform, good reforms here that start looking at that, but it really doesn't get to the longer, the deeper problems. And so first I have one question, and then I have a follow-up. What are you doing anything in the pension commission right this year? Was there any discussion about how we can permanently reform the system so we don't keep coming back with pension plan after pension plan after pension plan and bailing them out? We did this. We got TRA and St. Paul coming up yet. We did it with Minneapolis Police previous year. We've done it over and over again, and this puts the state at great risk, and as well as jeopardizing long-term solvency of these funds. So our concern, obviously, is solvency of these funds, so these people with the pensions, we meet the guarantees and obligations, and ensuring that the taxpayer is protected as well. So these are, you know, good, temporary. But what are we doing? What has been done or discussed about the long-term fix, permanent fix?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chamberlain, I'm not – I think every time the Pension Commission meets, we look long term. It's just that there isn't always one fix. It's a changing environment. So, for example, when you were on the Pension Commission, we lowered the interest rate assumption from 8.5% to 8%. We'll be relooking at that again to see if we should lower it more. We have consistently raised contribution requirements on the employer and on the employee. The need for state aid is really a result of years and years ago of not adequately funding these funds. Either the employer didn't have to pay anything, or the employee wasn't paying enough, or like for the judges, for example, the employer didn't start paying until 90, 1997 or something, till 1997. And so the employer is paying at a 20% rate, and we're raising that to 22% just to keep the judge's plan solvent. So it's really a result of lack of past investment and stewardship on the part of the legislature and the Pension Commission, if you will. So we're trying to rectify that. The years I've been on the Pension Commission, we've been a lot about more contribution rates, increasing those, restricting benefits. COLAs have been frozen for the past couple years for a number of the funds. They're held to 1% with two funds and 2% at another fund. In the past, COLAs were too high. We're going to be looking at COLAs. That's the cost of living adjustment, because they're very, very expensive. So it's really an ongoing process. I don't think it'll ever be finished, because we look at the stock market and we look at the benefits, and we're always making adjustment. But the goal is certainly full funding, and these funds have been fully funded in the past. I mean, the Duluth Teachers Fund up to 2008 was 100% funded. Some of them have been at 120%, 130% funding. So it's at that point, when you're that highly funded, then there is a tendency to give benefit increases. We're going to be very careful about that in the future.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas. Just as a quick note, I know the reduction from 8.5 to 8 was temporary. It's scheduled to go back up, so we shouldn't get too excited about that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Chamberlain,
Senator Pappas.
I don't think it's going to go back up. I think it's going to go down.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Pappas. But right now it's sitting at 8%. Last year's return in the market, I saw the data, was 2.5% return on the state board investment funds. And we keep reading the articles about, you know, 8 being very, very high and very risky. So, again, you know, if we want to protect these funds and protect the obligations we have, I think we need some real structural changes instead of just continuing to look at the same format of defined benefits would go somewhere else. But this is a structural problem I see that is unsustainable long term with changing demographics and aging public. But my next question, Senator Pappas, is the surcharges themselves. I know through the explanation we apparently have done something in the past. I don't know that that always means it's good or right. But it seems like there was a lot of opposition to this, and it seems like we look at these. We're going to the piggy bank, and we're looking under the couch cushions for the last pieces of last ways to fund these things. And then again, I think that puts an example of the jeopardy we're putting these funds in and jeopardizing long-term obligations we have to these people who have served the community. But the insurance taxes, 1, 2, 3, we got about 4 or 5 different insurance surcharges already. That consumers and customers pay. Now, someone might say, well, a little bit here, a little bit there. These are all hidden and buried. They're not transparent.
Senator Chamberlain, is there a question in that?
Yes, there is.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. In there somewhere is a question. So how long are we going to where would this possibly end? We keep doing this. It's not transparent, and we put a lot of people at risk, so how long will this go on? We keep going back to this well.
Mr.
Is that
Chairman?
A rhetorical or is there a question?
That's a question, Mr. Chair. That's a question. How long will we keep doing this?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chamberlain, there's no surcharge in this bill.
Senator Thompson.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think you're looking for questions now. Mine was more along the lines of a comment, so I'll wait.
Any other questions, members? Anybody in the audience that wishes to testify against Senate File 935? Seeing none, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Pappas, I'm in the opposite end from Senator Chamberlain. I was not on the past couple of years, and I'm just kind of learning about pensions now, or have over the last several weeks. And I have to agree that the problem we have here is it appears to me that you're trying to do the best you can with what you have. And what you have is a system that really doesn't work well in a volatile marketplace. And we've got a volatile marketplace. Now, let's take this 8% interest rate assumption, for example. Let's say we don't allow the ramp back up to 8.5%. Let's say we kick it down to 7.5 or 7. Well, that kind of sort of solves a long-run problem, but it actually makes a short-run problem worse, because now we have, the ability of the fund to remain fiscally sound is dependent upon the contributions going in, the rate of return, and the benefits coming out. So now if we assume a lower rate of return, now the projections for what this thing can produce down the road drop. And so I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. I'm saying you're attempting to solve one problem, and it creates another, which I think is further evidence of the problems with this kind of a system. And I wanted to point out that, I don't think we'll ever get away from having to come back to the taxpayer to fix this thing, as long as there's this expectation that a person can draw a certain amount out of these pensions. Again, defined benefit versus defined contribution. That's the problem. And so, you know, in a situation like this, I thank you for going along with keeping the surcharge out. The problem is now it falls back into the general fund, so one of two things will have to happen to cover that money. There'll have to be additional increases in taxes over those huge tax increases that are already being proposed in this legislative session, or it comes out of somebody else's pocket. It reduces the amount that can go, for example, to the formula in education or something else. So I think that we all want police, firefighters, all of our public employees to have a pension that they can depend on. But the real world is that, you know, people nowadays have employer matching contributions to a plan, and then they manage their investments, and it comes out how it comes out down the road. And I also realize there, you know, this is kind of the Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave because there is huge cost and there are tails in converting over to a defined contribution plan. But the point is, I think in the long run, to solve this problem, there's got to be a completely different way of thinking about these pensions. And if not, I guarantee you that, when I'm old and long out of this business, there'll be somebody in this chair dealing with the same problem.
And Senator Thompson, I think the contribution and changes of plans that the members have made over the last 3 years is certainly a pretty big step on their part. And now we're going to play some of our role and try to bring stability to this.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, we did have three others. If you don't want to hear from them, I did want to mention they were here. Dennis Flaherty from MPPOA. It supports the legislation. Niall Zickman on behalf of the fire chiefs. And Keith Carlson from the Metropolitan Inter-County Association. We're all available to testify.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'm glad you brought that up, because in no way am I suggesting that the participants in these plans have not in good faith tried to sit down and find solutions. They have. There's no question about that, and I think that I know Senator Pappas has done a tremendous amount of work trying to get these numbers to crunch. It's not people that are doing anything wrong here. It's a system that is not particularly well suited to this day and age. I think all the people who have worked on this have done their best to make it work.
Mr. Chairman, could I just make one comment?
Senator Pappas, do you have closing comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, I just would appreciate the support from the committee.
Anything else, members?
I'm sure we'll have this debate down the road.
Seeing none, Senator Rest moves Senate File 935. No. Chair leaves over 935 for possible inclusion.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you very much, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wieger. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Wieger. Senate File 935, the Education Omnibus Finance Bill.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, 453?
453. Did I say the wrong? Oh, okay, 453.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Tax Committee. Senate File 453 proposes to invest nearly $15.7 billion in our schools, our students, our future. That's nearly 41% of our budget. I'll just highlight a few of the new spending proposals. That would be $356 million in additional revenue we're looking at. Main area would be all-day K. would be optional but available for all students in Minnesota if that local school district wanted to provide it and if parents elected to enroll in that. Right now, we have a patchwork quilt of opportunity. 50% have it available for free, 17% pay for it, the others, no access. We also have an initiative for Mini Minds, early learning, for targeting a total of $50 million, $44 million in new money for students at risk, students that need early intervention to help prepare them so they're ready for kindergarten and ultimately ready for college or their career path. We also put $100 million additionally into the formula. It goes throughout Minnesota schools. That would average $52 per pupil unit added onto the formula. There are several additional programs ranging from additional funds for Reading Corps, Math Corps, additional funds for vocational programs, Career Tech, that Senator Stump has worked on particularly. We have additional funds for nutrition, our school lunch programs. But we also, and we thank you, Mr. Chair, we have $150 million in property tax relief. So in addition to the substantial investment targeted, we have $150 million in property tax relief. And that is accomplished by reduction in levy for a few primary areas, the Safe School levy, and that transfers to aid, most of it. We also apply that for charter schools, and intermediates would continue. There's a small levy that they would have, but they would continue. The capital operating levy that school districts currently have at about $110 million. That is converted to aid. Also, the equity levy, part of that is converted into assistance going to districts. We also add a gen ed levy. And there's this is not a new levy. It had been in place up to the 2001-2002. Eventually, it was repealed. But we have had a task force, the governor, the commissioner on school finance, a strong recommendation to return to that gen ed levy. And I would like to yield to my colleague, Senator Stump, who is the chief author on that proposal, to highlight the gen ed levy.
And Senator Wieger, just so I can kind of make sure I am understanding what you said, and members, I think if you can draw your attention to the spreadsheet titled Education FY 2014-15 Budget. It's got an A, B, C, D, E, F series of columns across it. As you go down to the line 8, 9,
got a mic,
11, et cetera, those are where the levy changes that Senator Wieger has been referring to, making the changes in the equity levy, eliminating the operating capital levy. If you go over to line column I, the negative numbers there are the property tax relief that he was referring to. Line F, I guess, is 2014. And then the gen ed levy that we're going to discuss now is line 2. And what occurred here is, from what my understanding, is there was $170 million of levy that was removed off the property taxes. They did not have enough. Their target from this committee was $150 million. So to make up the gap is the gen ed levy portion of that. And I think we'll let Senator Stump explain that. Is there any questions, members? Senator Stump?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you.
If I could just step back just a second on it looks if you look on line 11 on the spreadsheet, you'll see that there's also a reduction there in the or elimination of the alternative compensation, or what we would call QCOMP. It's really not an elimination. If you also look down to line 48, it's reinstated. So that was just a move from the general education funding portion of the statutes to outside of that, so there's no change in that that program.
And Senator Stump, the reason for that, members, is not all school districts receive QCOMP, so including it in the Gen Ed levy, which is general education, didn't seem appropriate. So we're just moving it outside of what all school districts receive, because all school districts don't receive it. Senator Stump.
Okay. What I'd like to do is just take a brief moment to kind of capsulize and trace back as to what happened. In 2003, when the general education levy was eliminated, the idea then was that we would basically fund the general formula for funding education 100% by state aid. And it was a probably a good idea. Well, I never thought it was a good idea, but it sounded like a good idea because it was right on the heels of several years of state surplus money. And at that time, Governor Ventura had part of his plan was to send checks back to the citizens of the state. The other part of his plan was that he was going to fully fund the school system in the state of Minnesota. And part of his plan to fund that was basically to expand the sales tax to services. And, of course, the sales tax extension to services did not fly, but we ended up with the 100% funding of the school general education formula, which then created a burden on the state that was unfunded to the tune of probably, I think it was close to $900 million per year. That then kind of triggered a kind of a pattern of rolling deficits in the state of Minnesota. In 2003, we had about $200 million in equalized levies. And members, I'm hoping I can have a report that was put together by the Department of Education ready for members on the floor so they can kind of trace what actually happened to our property taxes over the last 10 to 12 years. So we had about $200 million in referendum levies in roughly 2003-04 in that area, and they took off because the general education formula was held pretty constant, and in fact, actually, if you look in terms of inflation, it went down. So the school district's choice was to use referendums to pick up that difference, and so school districts across the state started running referendums, and then they urged the legislature to try to encourage those referendums basically by putting some equalization money in there. The problem was is that we have underfunded equalization almost every year that I can remember, and the disparity in the we have a term, it's called the 95th versus the 5th percentile. That disparity grew by 12.9% in the last 10 years. And so we have gotten a huge disparity now, a very growing disparity between those districts that can pass referendums and fund their school and those that cannot. And that's a worry that a lot of educators and the department across the state have brought to the attention of the legislature. Consequently, several working groups in the last few years have been put together, And the department has come out with recommendations, both under Governor Pawlenty and also now under Governor Dayton. And the recommendations are to try to narrow that gap, that disparity, so that we have an equal and equal opportunity of educating our children wherever you live and where whatever district you are in, whether it's property poor or property rich. And so that was the recommendation out of the education working group that participated all through last year. And so what we did was to take their recommendation, which was to take a bunch of levies that we currently have that are unequalized, buy those out, basically. And those were the operating capital levy. That was unequalized. We had the safe schools. And also the equity portion of the equity levy. And then we created a $20 million fully equalized, or what you could call a general education levy. And so that is basically we're following those recommendations, maybe not to the full extent, but by lowering those unequalized levies, by buying them out, and creating a fully equalized levy. And that's the outcome with what we did was lowering property taxes across the state in a very uniform way, because operating capital hits every district and basically is the difference from one district to another is relatively minor.
Thank you, Senator Stump. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair, the fiscal Senator year Weaker. 14 impact on property taxes for schools overall in the state, $2.3 billion, so we'd be flat. In fiscal year 15, there'd be a reduction of $150 million on the property tax levy in fiscal year 15. We have tracking sheets that further elaborate and fiscal staff's here to go through those, whatever your pleasure.
And Senator Weaker, are you referring to line 188, or would that be the line you're referring to?
Two oh one is post credits.
Mr. Chair, 201.
201. Column F is the starting point. Column I and column L as you move into the future. Questions, members? And well, you know, we're going to focus on the property tax component of this bill because that really is the area of jurisdiction. So, questions? Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we got away from a general education levy or whatever it was called in the Ventura administration, we were able to get to a situation where the decision by local governments to pass TIF districts was no longer relevant because there was no money being the state wasn't having to make up that amount in tax increment financing aid. And I just wonder, with a reinstatement of a general ed levy, is it going to be independent of the TIF district or TIF decisions, or is the state going to have to pick up once again that aid, or is it specifically school districts, a general ed levy specifically excluded?
Do we have any staff at the table that could help us answer that? Ms. McQuay?
Madam, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest, I think the way that, just for the purposes of what Senator Stump is talking about, rolling it onto the general ed so that the levies currently exist and then will just exist in a different place, and for the purposes of TIF, that there will be no change.
So there's
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, so Ms. McQuay, there's not going to be any obligation on the part of the state with regard to the tax increment financing decision of local economic development authorities with regard to school levies now.
Mr. Silva or Ms. McQuay?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chairman, Senator Russ, the school districts will still get a say, just currently they get to have the conversation about whether the TIF is going to occur or not. And so they would still, under this circumstance, and I don't see an instance here where they would lose that portion of the property.
No, they don't lose
tax.
It. Mr. Chairman, maybe I'll just
Senator
need
Rest.
To visit with the department more on that, but I will be very concerned if over the next few years a gen ed levy increases and because of a TIF decision, the state is going to be on the hook to make up the aid that would otherwise be lost. So,
Senator Rest, I think you're on an issue that we're going to have to pay attention as this goes forward. I did talk to Mr. Nauman about this earlier, and at that time he did indicate to me that he thought that the case was that the TIF district, it would be an impact as you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
What he did say is because the levy is so small that the impact would be very small at this point in time. But you would have to pay attention going into the future, so maybe we should look for some language.
And in that regard, what we had before was a recapture from cities so that the state was not on the hook on that. They considered it a penalty aid, and I will certainly be interested in reinstating that and taking back their LGA to the extent that the state has to make up writing a blank check for cities with regard to taking away that levy impact from the school. So I think we need to be very, very careful about how large we're going to allow property tax levy for the schools to be impacted by tax increment financing decisions. And what happened in 2003 is that it became irrelevant because there was no impact and with the complete takeover. So it's just a caution. I hope that number doesn't grow.
Thank you, Senator Rest. Anything else, members? Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Are we still asking questions? I do have an amendment I'd like to offer here.
Sure. Okay. Senator Wieger, Senator Stump, is there more presentation that you would like to make?
Mr. Chairman, there were a couple handouts that I brought. I don't know if they were ever handed out or not, but
I think they're okay. Out. Yes. Anything else, gentlemen?
That includes
Senator
a question for
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either Senator Wieger or Senator Stump, I wasn't here in 2002, but as I've been told, perhaps several times over, when we got rid of the general ed levy in 2002, the statewide business property tax was in some respects a replacement to that. Is there anything in this bill that deals at all with that, now that we're reinstating that levy?
Senator Stump, or
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Senjum, the problem. They were trying to address several problems back then, and one was the CI rate had been almost, I think it was actually 5%, and that was it was high, very high. So the worked out kind of solution was that the CI rate would come down to about 3.5%. And they would pay that into the statewide property tax
would go to or would be called a statewide property tax, and it was capped at that time. They had written a number into the statute of $585 million statewide. What happened is that over the next few years, property values, CI property values, went up, and so the rate kept coming down because as the total CI valuation went up, to reach that 585, it took less and less of a percent rate to get there, and consequently, as legislators saw that happening, it was not achieving that 3.5% rate, but it was down to, I think, under 3, and I think it was about 2.5% at one point. And so legislators said, well, this needs, that cap needs to be taken off. And then somewhere along the line, and I can't remember the exact year, the cap actually was removed. And then consequently, the total amount of statewide property taxes coming from commercial and industrial property went up. So now it's up to $800 million or so. So that was kind of the impact. What this does, we don't change anything relating to the commercial, industrial, or the statewide tax. I mean, that... We didn't feel that that was our prerogative, even though we had amendments in the committee that were offered to change it. That's really in your jurisdiction. So,
and Senator, okay. Senator Senjum, if I could help answer a little bit, as Senator Stump just indicated, as part of that 2001 big plan to eliminate the school levy, the gen ed levy, there was around $800 or $900 million of property tax relief across Minnesota. But then by 2003, over $400 million of that was back on the books. And as today, it's well over $1 billion just back on the books. The issue is not that the number is, even if it was exactly the same, because of the changes in who's paying. The gen ed levy was on adjusted net tax capacity, which took into account the classification rate that CI has, a higher classification rate. Now we're doing it on market value primarily, where the CI rate is not being taken into account. So it's been a pretty large shift of school levy impacts on the homeowners. And so that's part of this discussion that we have. So it's not only that the levies are back to above pre-2001 levies. It's a whole different subset of Minnesotans paying for some of that. And that's part of what I think the effort is here, is to buy down some of those education levies, because we're going to do a bunch of property tax relief over the next week in this tax committee. We've got the LGA proposal of Senator Reinhart's in front of us. They're going to talk about county program aid. And we just think we need to be taking an attack at the school levy also. Remember early in the year, we had a pretty good committee hearings on some of the bills that Senator Hoffman and I had. So we're looking at a lot of different things. This is the K-12's committee effort to try to reduce property taxes. And while you can agree or disagree with some of the mechanisms, it does do what the goal is by affording $150 million of relief in this biennium, and then almost 160 in the out years. And so I think that's kind of where we're at with that part of the discussion. Sure. And as we move forward, I'm sure we'll have opportunity to hear from the chamber and other business groups as to what their position is on this. Anything else, members? Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, a little change from direction.
Oh, sure. I forgot. I apologize. Senator fine. Chamberlain has an amendment. Can we pass it out?
Yeah. 813, we'll start with that one. I do have two myself.
Okay. Sure. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, Senator Wieger, this is fairly straightforward. Your bill, your legislation, your proposal here reduces our age shift down to 85.5 instead of the traditional 90%. So what this does is it returns this age shift payment back to the normal 90%. This has been, as you know, a very important issue in the last year, 2 years. This was a point of constant discussion. We're borrowing from the schools. We're taking from the schools. And so that was of some, very controversial. So your legislation here borrows more from the schools. Now, you'll argue that you're putting it back with other pieces and parts, but what your legislation is doing is, in fact, increasing the borrowing from schools. So this is going to reduce, this legislation will put it back up to 90%, reduce that borrowing, and make sure the schools are funded and we can reduce some of the stuff on the other side. And like I said, it was controversial. A lot of people were talking about it. It was a priority of the governor to pay back this shift. So what you're doing here in legislation is saying, no, we don't have to. And we are currently paid back to a little over 86% of the shift now with the current forecast. So even with this, with your legislation, you're reducing our current payback and borrowing from that that school fund again. So this puts it back to 90%, squares us up, makes the governor happy, will make the citizens happy because we're borrowing less from the students and from the schools. So with that, I would hope that you'd accept this and put it back to where it should be and has been.
Senator Chamberlain, I understand what you're trying to get at, but just so that everybody can kind of get their head wrapped around what's going on with the aid and the property tax recognition shift. There currently are two components to the school shift. There's the aid component, which is being addressed with this amendment. There's also the property tax recognition shift component. What this piece of legislation is doing is changing the percentage line between those two, but not changing the overall shift number. And I believe that's correct. And is Senate Counsel have some information for us yet on the dollar amount, or are we not going to get that?
Mr. Chair, members,
Ms. McQuay.
And maybe Mr. Wilms can speak to this a little better, the total cost of the shift and the cost of the amendment.
Ms. Wilms? Mr.
Mr. Chair and committee members, basically what's occurring here is my name is Jay Wilms. I'm the fiscal analyst for E12. Under the proposal, the chair's proposal that was passed out of division, with $150 million in property tax reduction, you lose the savings that goes along with it, which is approximately $73 million. And so that savings is shifted, is basically made up for by adjusting the aid payment shift. So net zero change overall on total shift.
So net zero change on total shift, but just change internally within the shift.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
I was looking at some here. Would you say that one more time, please?
Mr. Wilms.
Yeah, basically, Mr. Chair and committee members, what happens is you save about 48 cents on every dollar of levy authority, and by reducing, $150 million of those dollars, you lose about $73 million in savings. And so that savings is made up for on the aid payment shift side.
Senator Chamberlain.
So you're saying that I understand you're taking money and you're putting it somewhere else to say, well, that nets out the borrowing. But what this does in statute, it says our shift is not going to be any more than 90%, no more than 10%. And what you're doing with this legislation is you're increasing the ability to borrow and just shifting the money in a different area that's more flexible. The statute here at 90% would make it hard and fast, clear and distinct. The thing that we've been arguing about for 2 years at the 90%, the 90% solidifies that and says that's where it should be. And what you're doing is taking some other numbers and moving around where we could eventually end up borrowing more, and they can be in the same spot. And who knows where those other dollars end up. But I'd prefer we go back to the 90%. Would like a roll call on that, please.
Mr. Chairman?
Roll call being requested. There will be a roll call. Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, just to bring this to your attention that in 2005, we passed legislation to automatically buy back any shifts that we have, both age shift and property tax recognition shift. That's in statute, and in the last roughly year, the revenues that have come into the state have purchased back about $1.3 billion in shifts. So automatically this is occurring after the cash flow account is fully funded, the revenue or the reserve is fully funded, then the shifts are purchased back. So there really is no need to pass special legislation because it's already in statute.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's Chapter 16A, 152, sub 2. And we have a mechanism in place for the responsible repayment.
I think the projections are that it'll be paid back, if not in the next year, certainly in the following year. But and because in your bill the net for the shift is zero, whether there's a little internal change, I don't see as significant. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask the fiscal analyst, what would be the cost of this amendment?
Mr. Wilms.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I don't have that information before me. I think in fiscal year 15, I think the total aid payment shift was approximately $300 million, but I'll have to check back and give you the exact number.
But this would not, Senator Eaton, Mr. Wilms, this would not be a $300 million amendment. It's closer to an $80 million amendment. Is it 300? It is 300. The cost of this amendment is 300 mm-hmm. million? Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I agree that you say it's a cost, but current statute required, and we had changed it a couple of times, but you know, you see in the language of the bill, it had been to 70 and 60%, and we are currently refunded that shift. We have currently paid back that borrowing. We have currently paid back the amount we borrowed to 86%, a little over 86%. So I would also agree with their numbers that the difference here is between the 86% and the 0.5%. So, probably about $80 million, but it's really not a cost. It's our current obligation that we all worked on and talked about. It's our current obligation back to the old standard of 90%. So to say it's a cost, it isn't, because it's money that would belong to the schools in the first place. You're just moving the numbers around here so you can lower the payback and not have to do the payback of the borrowing. I agree with Senator Wieger and others that the increased revenue collections, the process, as Senator Stump said, has been paying back that shift, reserves, cash flow reserves, and then shift. So the money that we've been taking in has covered that, repaid almost that entire $1.4 billion or wherever it was to the normal point of, we're at 86%. So this is not a cost. This is what we currently owe to the schools that was borrowed, that we discussed for 2 years at length. We all got probably tired of it. So I disagree with the idea that it's a cost. It's putting 90% back in statute was simply for an accounting process anyway, that you had the 10% difference. You get 90% now, adjust from, have some leeway and movement in the budget, and make the balance of the payment a couple months later. That's why the shift was originally in 10%. So to go to 85%, we don't need to go to 85%. And I think I have all due respect for Senator Wieger and Mr. Stump, but there's a word that's been thrown around here. This is kind of gimmicky in truth, because we have 90% we're supposed to borrow. You're just lowering that threshold. So I'll stop talking, and we can vote on it.
Roll call. Senator Chamberlain renews his motion on the A13 amendment. A roll call being requested. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy.
No.
Senator Bach.
Absent.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick.
No.
Senator Eaton.
No.
Senator Coonan.
No.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Ortman.
Yes.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Sinjum.
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Did we lose?
By a vote of 5 yeses and 7 noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Senator Chamberlain.
One last amendment.
Can we pass that out, Senator Chamberlain?
It's A-16, Mr. Chair.
A-16 amendment. Senator Chamberlain.
Regrettably, it's not as simple. It is simple in concept. There's a lot of little pieces to this, but essentially what this does is it gets rid of the general ed levy that's in here and restores a safe school levy and a safe school aid, and the mechanism of this amendment will effectively keep those property tax impacts to the local citizens flat. But essentially we're not restoring that. We're taking out that new tax, that new general ed levy. The general ed levy has a couple of problems. One is it's an additional tax on top of what we already have, a statewide property tax, business property tax. This general ed levy, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but I believe this would impact everybody, homeowners and businesses. And thirdly, there is no cap to this. It starts at $20 million, and if I'm correct, the aid, the general ed starts at $20 million, goes up to $30 million in 2 years. And I don't know if there's any cap to it. So I would hope we could have a little bit of discussion on this. And I know that Senator Sinjem had talked about it briefly before. But this general ed levy is very, it will be regressive. It's going to harm jobs. It hasn't worked that effectively in the past, and these attempts to buy down local property taxes, while laudable, have not always been that successful. But it's an extreme impact on local businesses and residents and homeowners, and we're again shifting the cards around in front of you and trying to. I think this is a little bit confusing to citizens, but they're going to be impacted by new taxes with no cap, and so I hope we can have a discussion about the viability of this proposal. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain, just so I can understand what you're attempting to do here, you're removing the Gen Ed Levy Line 2.
Yes.
And replacing those revenues with the Safe Schools Levy, which would be a non-equalized levy?
Oh, yeah, let me go get a couple points. We remove the state, we remove the General Ed Levy, replace it with state aid, $20 million. We'd replace the Safe Schools aid with a levy at $25 million, and all these schools usually are already levying this amount. So this, going back to that safe school levy, does not change that fact. And the third part is that we can help by also increasing some of the equity aid by $5 million. So there is some offset to the increased property tax hit that they might take. So we do replace the general ed levy. It was the general. We get rid of the state aid, get the Safe Schools Levy back, and put some state aid in there as well to help equalize that.
And Senator Chamberlain, just so I understand, where is the revenue for the general fund component coming from again, please?
The revenue from the general fund.
I thought you said you were replacing the Gen Ed levy with the general fund dollars.
Yeah, I mean the Safe Schools Levy would go back into that mix, and we just take $5 million and increase the aid by that much. I think we could find $5 million in the general fund. We're throwing around a lot of money here.
Senator Ortman, can you help us clarify?
That was not the purpose for
okay.
for asking to be recognized.
Can we understand what the amendment
does? Yeah,
go ahead.
I'll wait.
Senate, anybody at Senate staff? Mr. Arneson.
Chair and members.
State your name for the record, please.
Bjorn Arneson, Senate nonpartisan fiscal staff. The effect of the amendment would be, as Senator Chamberlain has described, would be to delete the sections that create the sections in the bill that create the general education levy. It would be to restore the Safe Schools levy back to a levy. And it would be to increase the equalizing factor on equity revenue such that the aid levy mix would be increased to sort of net out at roughly zero. So the balance of levy in the bill and the balance of aid in the bill are neutrally affected by this amendment in total.
Senator Wieger, do you have any thoughts about this?
Yes, I oppose. We articulated why we were strongly for the Gen Ed levy. I want to remind members that each biennium you would have to approve if you wanted that to increase. So you know, that's up to the voters who they put here, and that would be the check on anything that we do. The rationale for the Safe School levy and others that we proposed continues to be that we want that converted to revenue-driven rather than levy.
Okay. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if the chair's reforms for equalization are also included in the current form of the bill.
Senator Ortman, the E-12 committee chose a different route, but I think we're going to have an opportunity to discuss that yet this session. So it's not in this bill.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that would be my point, is that I'm not a big fan of either of them, but I certainly hope we don't end up with both of them. I don't think that we need to have a new general ed levy and the changes in the equalization and also the statewide business property tax all to fund schools. I think that's a huge encroachment of government, state government, in funding our schools. I'm concerned about that. And Senators Wieger and Stumpf, I'm hoping that you're going to advise us which is the better option here.
Well, Senator Ortman, the equalizing formula that I propose is not in front of the committee today, so I don't know if they want to comment on that. But the other thing, I mean, we're replacing local property taxes with state dollars. That's the impact of all of this. Right. And if you don't like that, and you'd prefer that the local property taxpayers pay for the school funding, well, we probably have differences on that. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important that the committee, I'd just like to talk a minute about what the Safe Schools levy is used for. It's used for police officers, sheriffs, drug abuse prevention, gang resistance, education, security in the district schools, crime prevention, and licensed school counselors, school nurses, social workers, psychologists, and alcohol and chemical dependency counselors. And also, I'm sponsoring a legislation with Senator Johnson that would allow that money also to be used for licensed mental health professionals. And if you think about all the things that we're experiencing recently in our schools and in our world around us, these are incredibly important safety measures for our school, hence it's called the Safe School Levy. So I do want members to be cognizant of the fact that certainly the Safe Schools Levy is more important now probably than it ever has been.
Mr. Chair.
And Senator Nelson, just so I can be clear, there's no decrease in dollars for those important things. It's just that the state is going to be paying those dollars as opposed to the local property taxpayer. Senator Wieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I was going to point that out. We strongly agree. We provide the revenue, and Senator Johnson, and your proposal is in there for mental health professionals. We also have Senator Sieben's proposal for laminated glass security and for some of the tragic events that have occurred, and this is included. We have additional funds for charter schools as well, and the intermediates will continue. So voting no on this amendment, which I encourage as it relates to levy for property tax, we prefer that it be a part of the state appropriation.
Senator Chamberlain, final word?
Yeah, final comment. First, before I forget, roll call, please.
Roll call being requested. Roll
and
call
final comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, a lot of work, some good stuff in here, but I think this is the wrong way to go, again, for a couple of reasons. One is we are replacing local control and local effort with almost, we're going down a path of complete state oversight of these schools and removing a lot of their ability to function and do things as they see best in their communities. We're getting back to a one-size-fits-all, and we'll have districts up here from all over the state and making our problems more complicated and the legislation worse. So I think in the long run, this is the wrong way to go by replacing some of these local efforts with complete state control. We're just going the wrong direction. Secondly, increased burdens on businesses and all property owners for this statewide general ed levy, while not decreasing at all the statewide business property tax, is frankly taking the plug out. With no caps on that, I think we're headed down the wrong path. And third, I don't know that this is going to – the intent with the reforms in 01, as I think Senator Senjum and others have mentioned, was to reduce the burdens of on local property tax property taxpayers and decrease the amount of referendums and the pressure to create referendums. Well, it's pointed out that that worked initially, but we're back up above the 2001 levels. All these school districts, virtually all the school districts are doing operating referendums, even with $800 million a year in statewide business property tax money to go to the schools and create the aid, plus the other aid and support. So I don't know that this is going to have any of the impacts that we hope, Frank, that you would hope to have. Frankly, I think it's going to make things worse, and it's going to increase the regulation, the code, and the statutory burdens. So that's my final word. I hope people would consider that and vote for this amendment. Thank you.
And Senator Chamberlain, I'd just like to remind you that there is $150+ million of property tax relief in here, of which over 40% of that is paid by businesses. So there's pretty significant property tax relief in here for businesses. And the other thing I would like to remind the members is, with regard to the gen ed levy, it will not change unless the legislature votes to approve it and the governor signs the bill. Senator Chamberlain renews his motion on the A16 amendment.
Mr.
Roll
Chairman.
Call. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Chamberlain, I'm not going to support your amendment, but I share your skepticism about reinstating the gen ed levy. Have gotten some information about its impact on tax increment financing, and I will have an amendment probably in the tax bill, if not in this bill, later to make sure that the state is not on the hook for tax increment financing decisions relative to this new levy.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Skoy?
No.
Senator Bach?
Absent.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Senator Eaton?
No.
Senator Coonan?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Reinert?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Sinjum?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
By a vote of 6-6, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A17 amendment. And while that's being passed out, maybe I can describe.
Senator Nelson, pass out the A17,
amendment.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment allows our schools to have greater flexibility in how they use their funds. There's no additional there's no financial changes here, but it looks at compensatory revenue, which currently, according to current law, a district or cooperative may allocate up to 5% of their compensatory revenue for plans adopted by the school board, and the money can be used for various purposes as defined in Subdivision 1, which I could read to you here. There's about 11 options. What my amendment does is it puts a little more trust, a little more local control with our school districts, and it allows them to use 15% of the money that we send them for compensatory revenue for any legally allowable public education purpose for any student in any grade. And, of course, that includes students attending school readiness or other pre-kindergarten programs. I think it's critical that we give our schools more flexibility. This is just a very small incremental way to do that. It doesn't have any financial further obligations on the state. And again, it grants for flexibility. And I would ask for maybe the author would accept this as a friendly amendment.
Senator Wicker.
Mr. Chair, I like flexibility. I'd like to also get feedback from the department and others. I'm not prepared to accept it at this point.
Senator
Wicker. And we haven't had discussion on this in committee.
Mr. Chair.
This appears to be policy. I was wondering, has the Education Policy Committee vetted any of this?
Just gives more flexibility.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson.
No, it did not. This just came to me from my school district yesterday. So certainly, though, the idea of local control is something that has been certainly talked about in not just education policy, but certainly all across the legislature and certainly the entire state, I believe, looking at local control for our school districts.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, it seems to me that this is something that should be discussed by the Education Policy Committee and or, you know, it, as a floor amendment. But this committee is charged with looking at the relevant sections of the bills that are coming before us and with regard to the education finance bill, that means tax policy, that means property tax policy, and not Senator Chamberlain's amendments dealt with tax policy, and they were perfectly appropriate even though they didn't pass. But this is not tax policy, and there might be a lot of good ideas out there with regard to improvements in this bill, but this committee should concentrate on tax policy, and I guess we can, you know, stay here all day and have more policy initiatives. There are some that I'd like, but I don't see that this is the proper place for it. And I really would hope that you would save this for another day and withdraw it.
Mr. Chair, I would give Senator Nelson the option right now to withdraw, and we could talk about it. Senator Chamberlain, you know, when you offered an amendment on another matter, we resolved that by not offering it for the first time where we're seeing it, but we discussed it. So if we could go that route, and we'll talk further on policy issue.
Senator Irvin.
Mr. Chair, I was going to say that we're talking in this amendment about how certain revenues may or may not be used to a school, its authorization. And I would say that folks can vote no on this amendment if they want to, if they think that it's inappropriate in this committee, but I have seen more policy changes in the Finance Committee in this year than I have in the last five. And so I've also seen all kinds of policy changes here and bills that addressed appropriation, including some of the alcohol tax proposals that we've seen. So I think people should vote no if they don't want to, and Senator Nelson may want to withdraw given the guidance that she's gotten about how far this amendment would go. But before we would take a vote, I would hope we would at least be given some information about what's in subdivision one, what are the current uses of those funds and limitations before we would talk about adjusting them.
Senator Armin, we're not going to get into the education policy debate. Senator Nelson, do you want to renew your motion, or do you want to withdraw the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I want to first say that, as you know, I usually like to check amendments with chairs ahead of time. I think it's the right thing to do, and I want to apologize for Senator Wicker that this didn't get to me in a more timely manner to do so. However, I will be offering it on the Senate floor, but I don't want to take up a lot of time in this committee on this, but my point would be, if there's a very short answer from the department, I think it would be helpful to actually have that answer, because I definitely will be offering it on the floor. So the chair, I guess
we will indulge that You could get that offline, but seeing you sitting at the table, if you have a short answer.
Mr. Chair, members, Darren Cordy with the Department of Education. We had a somewhat similar provision in the governor's education budget bill, which would have increased the flexibility from 5 to 15%. However, the governor's proposal would not open up the use to any legally allowable education purpose. Like this says, it would continue to make sure that 15% is used for compensatory purposes, but they could shift that money between different school sites. So we would support the expansion to 15%, but not opening it up to any legally allowable purpose.
And Senator Nelson, will that be guidance for you on the floor?
Mr. Chair, at this moment, then I'll withdraw my amendment, but I have another.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A-12 amendment, and again, Senator Wieger, my apologies for not getting to you sooner on this. The A-12 amendment, I think, is being passed out, and maybe I can just tell you briefly what it does as it's being passed out. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment actually is in line with what Senator Ortman just brought up, which had to do with the amendment in the Finance Committee that was added to delay the teacher evaluation effective date. And so this amendment simply strikes that language that pushes the teacher eval date out. This leaves it as it is currently in law, which is the 2014-15 year. Mm-hmm. So this amendment simply removes the amendment that was added in the Finance Committee. And the reason it's so important, Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Wieger, I know we visited about this as well.
Senator Nelson, would you keep your comments to sure. The property tax components here?
It's a policy.
Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, this was added in the Finance Committee. So my amendment is just to remove the amendment that was added in the Finance Committee. So I'm assuming it's the same amount of policy here as it was there.
It balances
Senator
out.
Nelson, Senator Nelson, we'll have a vote on this. Is there property tax ramifications to this?
No.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
No.
Thank you. Anything else, members?
Is there a vote on this, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll ask for roll call.
Yeah, roll call vote being requested. Roll call will be granted. Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair, just briefly, I couldn't agree more. It was put out in finance. This is policy. So this kind of zeroes it out, I'd say. Get back to where we were and bring it back up clean to the floor. Thank you.
Members, I expect we'll have another roll call vote on this on the floor.
Mr. Chair,
we'll call the roll.
Mr. Chair, before the roll, I just wanted to make a comment in favor of this. I'm not a real big fan of changing policy in the Tax Committee, but since this is the new way of doing business in the Tax Committee, I think we should have this vote today. I am going to vote in favor, and one of the reasons why is we have a University of Minnesota that's only accepting 63% of Minnesota students. Maybe we'd do better if we had teacher evaluations and requirements for criteria. I think this is a good plan.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy.
No.
Senator Bach.
Absent.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick.
No.
Senator Eden.
No.
Senator Coonan.
No.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Ortman.
Yes.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest.
No.
Senator Sinjum.
Yes.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
By a vote of 5 yeses and 7 noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments, members? Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, this is a tax-related amendment.
Good.
Mr. Chair, this is an oral amendment, but it's pretty simple. And on page 21, continuing to page 22, strike section 42 of Article 1.
And can you describe the impact of that amendment?
Yes, I will. Mr. Chair and members, this amendment strikes the general ed levy. And we've had a little bit of discussion about that. Certainly, this would decrease property. Would you like me to discuss the amendment here?
Senator Nelson.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, this would decrease property taxes in fiscal year 15 by $19.52 million in 16 by 26.219 million and in 17 by 30 million. And what I'd like you to notice is that just between 15 and 17 in the bill that we have before us today, you'll see that that's already a 50% increase. And the other thing I would mention, which I think was mentioned here, but I had to run out a bit, so I might have missed it, is that the business property tax was put in place in 2001 because the general ed tax was removed. And so here we are bringing back this one, and we have not yet removed the business property tax. So my amendment simply removes the section of the law that's the general ed levy.
And Senator Nelson, Senator Chamberlain's bill was balanced. This would put the bill out of balance. Do you have any offsetting revenue to replace the gen ed levy?
Mr. Chair, you are correct. This would not be in balance, and it would put a $20 million hole in the bill, but I believe that our Senate rules do not require that bills be in balance here, but they certainly would need to be on the floor of the Senate.
Okay, just so you're aware.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
I oppose. I believe we had that debate on an earlier related motion.
Thank you. Senator Nelson moves an oral amendment to strike section 42. All those in favor say
roll call.
Aye. We're in the middle of a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. No.
No. No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment's not adopted. Anything else, members?
I have another amendment,
Senator
Mr.
Nelson.
Chair. Thank you. This is the A14 amendment. I think that's being passed out. Mr. Chair, might I talk about this amendment?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Members, Mr. Chair, this amendment, again, is about the general education levy, which still is in the bill. This amendment actually gets to the point about as this general education levy is increased, that for every dollar of increase over that $20 million for 15, we at least, at a minimum, we see a 50-cent reduction in the business property tax. So it's a gentle way of trying to do what Senator Wieger's proposing to do here, which is add a general education levy, and at the same time make sure that we're not adding that on top of what is already the general business levy.
Senator Stump or Senator Wieger, either one of you?
Mr. Chairman, I guess my first reaction when I see this is that this amendment is trying to tie the hands of the tax committee. I don't know if you want to restrict your authority in that way or not. But
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I think if Senator Cohen was here, he would say this throws his targets out of balance because this reduces money to the state's general fund. So I think there's a – Senator Wieger, if this goes on, we'll have a problem with Senator Cohen relative to his budget target.
Senator Bach, as with the previous amendment – Senator, which one of you guys?
Go ahead.
Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say it's a wonder that Senator Cohen can keep track of all the money they're planning to add into the general fund in the next couple of years with all the tax and fee increases being proposed this year. Yeah.
Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if Senator Bach was in the room, but we did talk about that Senate rules, they do not need to be in balance in this committee.
Mr. Chair, technically, I don't believe this impacts our target for the upcoming biennium. This would be for subsequent application of the gen ed levy, which would be up to the legislature. You have jurisdiction on the ways you want to apply that levy, so I'll yield to you on how you want.
I'll ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
You want to call for a roll call? Roll
Thank
call
you.
Being requested. Roll call is granted. Ms. McQuay.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment that Senator Nelson offered does not, as I read it, change the general education levy or the targets for that. It would have an effect on revenues and therefore affect targets, I suppose.
Anything else, members? Senator Nelson renews her motion on the A14 amendment. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy.
No.
Senator Bach.
No.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick. Senator Eaton.
No.
Senator Coonan.
No.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Ortman.
Yes.
Senator Reinert.
No.
Senator Rest. Senator Sinjum.
Yes.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
We're still here lying, yes.
By a vote of 5 yeses and 7 noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my final amendment, and I must have had a premonition about how the others would go. This is the A-15 amendment. And I should it should be passed out. Yes.
Senator Nelson.
Members, this amendment deletes those increases in the statewide general levy. So we briefly talked about how in just 2 years it has seen a 50% increase as the law is as the bill is currently written. And the A-15 amendment limits the increases so that the levy would stay at about the $20 million for fiscal year 15. So it's a freeze.
Senator Nelson is proposing to freeze the inflator on the statewide business property tax. This would, again, bring the bill out of balance. Anything else, members?
I'd like a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Roll call is granted. Senator Stump for Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the reason it goes up, there are slight adjustments in the levies, and when you look at the levy tracking sheet, you'll notice that there's like two school districts that have asked for some levy authority for handicap accessible elevators and other miscellaneous kinds of small levy adjustments. So I think that's the impact of having why they actually go up. And I'm not I don't have a list.
Career and technical
was another one. We ended up two years ago. The levy was capped for career and technical at $15 million statewide, and that program is very vital and important in job creation and filling jobs across the state. So that cap was removed in here so that it could go up to where it, where the need is. But that difference was bought off by aid so that it looks like the levy is going up to, I believe, $22 million. No, what is it? Going up to $24 million, but the difference between the 14 and the 24 was basically bought off with state aid. So it's those minor adjustments in small levies is why that you see that tracking going up.
Senator Stump, so I misspoke. This is not impacting the statewide business property tax inflation adjustment. This is those miscellaneous levies that schools have for elevators and other things that they need to do, including the career and technical. Does Mr. Arneson have something to add to this?
Mr. Chair and members, the effect of the Nelson Amendment would be to not necessarily throw the appropriations target out of balance in fiscal year 2015, but to throw the appropriations, E-12 finance appropriations, over target by roughly $6 million in 2016 and roughly $10 million in 2017.
Okay, thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear. It's freezing the gen ed levy. That's what this amendment does. Freezes the gen ed levy at the $20 million.
Mr. Arneson, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. Yes.
Any more discussion, members? Roll call being requested. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Scoy.
No.
Senator Bach.
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Dietzick? Senator Eaton?
No.
Senator Coonan?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Reinert?
No.
Senator Rest? Senator Sinjum?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Any other amendments, members? Oh, I'm sorry. Kind of got used to this. On a vote of 5 yeses and 7 noes, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments, members? Any other discussion? Senator Stump or Senator Wieger? Anybody in the audience wish to testify against Senate File 453?
One final comment, Mr. Chair.
Who is Senator Chamberlain?
Yeah, just one final comment. I know that, I, like he said, some good things in his bill, but it's the uncontrolled, unrestrained growth, well, bringing it to the state and out of the local hands. In the tails, I don't know how we're going to deal with this, but again, I just like to repeat for the 50th time that great concerns about how this is going to end up impacting not only the local folks, but up here. We've shifted a lot of things around, made things more confusing. We're going to create code and regulatory burdens, and we're going to take away control and have unrestrained spending. But thank you.
And Senator Chamberlain, I believe that the Senate targets are balanced, providing a 4-year balanced budget, so the tails are in balance also. And Senator Wieger, did you hit your target on all 4 years?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you. Anything else, members? So, Senator Rest moves that Senate File 453 be recommended to pass and referred to the Senate floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Bill's passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Senator Wieger, Senator Stump. We are going to recess. We're going to have the Health and Human Services bill in front of the committee after session today. That is our expectation. Senate committee is in recess.
Mr. Chair, can we leave things here?